Welcome to the Scaling Tech Podcast, where we help you manage your growing engineering team. Through expert interviews, we help you navigate the challenges of leading, hiring, growing, and nurturing your tech team to deliver the value your customers demand. Brought to you by AgilityFeet.com, experts in staffing engineering teams in Latin America for clients globally.
And I think because we, and I'll include myself in that, and the creators of these methods wanted to sell them to make a nice living for ourselves and to help teams out in the meantime, became very attached to processes, to the individual processes. And we forgot the experimentation part. It's empirical process control is built into Scrum, and yet very few Scrum teams change their process. They'll tweak it a little bit, but they don't fundamentally wander off the ranch.
Welcome to the Scaling Tech Podcast, the podcast for leaders of growing software engineering teams. I'm Aaron Syme, here with my co-host, David Alfaro. How are you doing today, David?
I'm doing fine. Here in Costa Rica, it's cold for our standards, not for yours. I mean, cold here means, to me, 70 Fahrenheit. That's cold.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember that. I remember living there, and when the temperature went down from like 75 to 70 degrees Fahrenheit, people start putting on winter coats.
Yes.
And it was always a funny experience to me, whereas here, if in the wintertime, when you get up to like 60, 65 degrees, people take off the winter coats and they're walking around in t-shirts just to enjoy the change of pace.
We're fine here. It's okay.
We are fine here is maybe a good sentiment to think about throughout this episode today, where we talk about has Agile lost the plot? I'm really pleased in this episode to welcome back an old friend and mentor, Bob Payne. I spent a lot of time with Bob. We were on site with a couple of clients together for months at a time. It was a phase of my career where I was doing the most like road warrior travel. And during the day, I was coaching Agile teams with Bob and learning from him. And then at night, I was in my hotel room working remotely with you, David, to get our software development business at Agility.
I remember that.
Yeah, so it's kind of basically working two jobs at the time, but the lessons I learned from Bob during the day carried over also into our work together and how we worked in the evenings. So I know I've learned a lot from Bob in the past, and really interesting to hear today his impressions of where Agile is and where it's gone over the last 20 plus years that all three of us have been involved in it. What should our listeners look out for today in this conversation with Bob?
Honesty and a crude review of what has happened with the agility movement, which is not necessarily the same to the agility concept by itself.
Right.
So it is a very honest back and forth discussion. What things went wrong and are wrong, and what things are good, and the hopes for the future. So yeah, it's going to be a treat for the audience.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think we really need to make sure that we're always remembering in any process, in any methodology, in any work that we do, are we delivering value to customers? And this conversation with Bob today is a great reminder of that. So let's get to our conversation with Bob Payne. Bob Payne is an early adopter of extreme programming and Scrum. He's worked as a lean agile transformation leader since 1999. He's the senior vice president of agile training and coaching at Lightspeed. He's also the host of the Agile Toolkit podcast, founder of Agile Philanthropy, chair of the Agile DC conference, an organizer and speaker at national and international conferences. With nearly 20 years of practical hands-on Agile experience, Bob has served as a trusted advisor to executives, teams, and management at leading firms, including the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, the IRS, Nike, Freddie Mac, Fannie Mae, National Geographic, Nationwide Insurance, Royal Bank of Canada, Samsung, and Walmart. Welcome to the Scaling Tech Podcast, Bob.
Well, thanks for having me. I really appreciate the chance to get back together with you guys. You know, we've known each other for a long time, Eric and David. It's very nice to finally sit down and have a conversation with you. I've heard the podcast before, so I feel like I know you, but obviously
okay. We awesome. Just met. Awesome. I feel the same.
Well, we do go back quite a ways, Bob, and you were an early mentor in my Agile coaching career. Got to work with you on a number of clients. But tell me, let's start with how did you get started in Agile in general and Agile coaching and transformational leadership specifically?
Well, there's a reasonable duration in that journey. Again, started in 99, so now it's actually a little bit over 23 years. I had come to an inflection point with my previous career, and I had been working as a programmer. For many years, been an architect. Then the latter at that point was to move up to project management. And I really hated project management. I loved delivery, but I failed to recognize the problem at that point in my life, because I'd been an electrical engineer and understood systems and systems theory and theory of constraints. But I went in at one point to talk to my development manager, and I said, look, all of these projects are coming in late. We're constantly struggling with budget. The requirements churn all the time, and yet we're demanding that we be predictable. And just something didn't quite feel right. And I looked around, and project managers around me were perfectly happy with the situation. And it just made zero sense to me. And my development manager at that point, very, very nice person, but suggested that maybe I needed to take a Microsoft project course. And
that's a terrible solution to this problem.
Sure. Yeah. I instantly knew that was not the solution. And I was at the point in my life where I didn't really have a ton to lose. So I just quit. I just tendered my resignation without a plan, without a rebel without a clue, as to what I was going to do. But I knew it would be something different. And interestingly enough, I said, well, I want to go back to being technical. There happened to be a Star East conference, which is focused on testing, in DC. And I went there and I ran into, one of my mentors, a gentleman by the name of Flavio Diomedi, And he had worked at the company I was at, but I wasn't working for him. He was the CIO at that time. And he said, oh, you've got to go. I wished you had seen, or he said, did you see this gentleman? Well, gentleman's a strong word. This guy by the name of Ron Jeffries, and he's talking about extreme programming. He was actually just really talking about, at that point in XP, the white book, right? Because in XP, we referred to the books as colors, because there was the white book, the green book, the black book, the orange book. There were a number of books that had different colors. And the white book was the first by Kent Beck. And I was like, oh, shoot. And he said, it's really interesting. It's an iterative incremental method. He had been looking for new ways of delivering value to our clients. It was a consulting and software development firm. And so I said, I missed it. And I found out, I don't know whether he mentioned that there was a birds of the feather session after the conference, or that evening, at Capital City Brewing, which was near Union Station, which was not far from where I live. So I wandered over and met Ron, who was my first coach, and really great, inspiring leader in the space of technical agility. And he talked about XP, extreme programming. And I kind of decided on the spot, this is what I wanted to do. So I bought the book and I read it, and that made me an expert in the DC region because I had read all the literature on this particular method. And being a rebel without a clue, I went back and started, looking into agile methods and this idea of getting small pieces to work, iteratively, incrementally tying them together, evolving the architecture, evolving the design, and focusing critically on what does a customer want, what's most critical, what's riskiest. Let's experiment, let's do that, let's get that done first, and then we can move on to something else. Well, I didn't make the connection then, because still rebel without a clue, that this was exactly how electrical engineering works, right? Mm-hmm. If I'll just use simple components. If the resistor doesn't work or is the wrong value, right? And the way you troubleshoot circuits is you isolate components and test them in isolation to ensure that they work. You start to wire them into systems that start to exhibit behavior, and then you build from there. But if those individual components don't work, and in XP terms, Kent and Bill Wake and Ron Jeffries and all of the folks on that team were really focused on test-driven development, which most people get wrong, but they're doing the best they can, bless their hearts. It is really a way of focusing on, does this little piece of code work? And if it doesn't work, it doesn't matter how I wire it together with other stuff. And building it out into more and more complex behaviors. But it still didn't quite connect back to my formal education in electrical engineering early on. And I decided that's what I wanted to do, as I mentioned earlier. Interestingly, got a call from Flavio, and he said, we'd like to run an XP project. We'd like you to be the coach, because I'd read the book, so therefore I was an expert. We're going to get Ron to come in and coach. I said, perfect, great, sounds what did I had already quit. I mean, I had nothing to lose. It was going to be cash flow, which is important as a rebel without a clue, without a plan. And so I went back and started delivering. And I know that you've had Sanjeev Augustine mm-hmm. on the show. So I started paired programming with a couple of folks that are now at Lightspeeder, now Lightspeeders. So Raj and Dugala. George Lively and a number of folks who were delivering project in Python. So I learned Python for that project, and I sort of TDD'd my way into understanding the language, was doing a bunch of paired programming. And Sanjeev, was brought in as sort of, let's just say, adult oversight. He was a project manager at this company, and he was more of a traditional project manager, and came in to be the project manager for this small program that was running, because we still had deadlines, we still had scope, schedule, and cost concerns. So, wanted to make sure that we were going to deliver. And it turned out to be a great experience, and really kickstarted my career in what would later become, because this was before the manifesto. I didn't invent agility, but we were doing it before it was called Agile. And immediately Sanjeev saw the value and started trying to build a little Agile practice in that organization that I had left. I'd since become an independent contractor. Ron came in for a few days, and he always bugs me every time I see him that, you know, they decided that, you know, we could go it alone fairly quickly. So he didn't get the coaching engagement that he had hoped for, but you know, we still are acquaintances and friends to this day. And so we just started delivering using Agile methods, ironically, at the company I just left.
But at least you got out of going to Microsoft project training.
I did. Unfortunately,
so it's still a very successful exit.
Yeah, it was a successful exit. And you're much smarter as an external consultant than you are as an internal employee. So we all know that to be true. and really never looked back. So that was a very long, you know, sort of origin story. Number of years later, I heard about Scrum and started to do that. Sanjeev and I did a very large program in 2001. We did a scaled extreme programming, where we had, you know, 8 teams would literally line up in the hall. The teams would have their daily stand up, and then a member of the team would step out to represent the team of teams program. And every 2 weeks we were planning together, executing together, integrating the code, and demoing together as a team of teams. So oddly enough, it kind of looked like less in a little bit, you know, of that with all the technical practices laid in. And then ran into Scrum. Scrum was increasingly more popular. Ken and Mike Cohn had started to stand up the Scrum Alliance to do certification. And, you know, the XP folks said, you know, we don't need no stinking badges, and we're not going to do certification. And really, Scrum's secret weapon was certification, right? It was their main marketing tool to become the most popular method. So folks like Mike Cohn and myself and Sanjeev and others migrated over to Scrum because that's where the work was. But we're always rooted in this idea of get stuff done. And I know you're a kind person, but if I were a bumper sticker, I wouldn't say stuff, right? The original ethos of all the Agilists, all of them, was rooted in getting things done that were valuable for the customer and making delivery and development safe and humane for the people that were doing that delivery. And they were mostly focused on developers early on. That evolved to include the other skills that were needed to get stuff done. And so I quickly became a Scrum trainer in like 2005. And have been a conference speaker and run my own conference. And I started podcasting in 2005 with the Agile Toolkit podcast, and have really seen the community grow since, you know, 99. Clearly there was a lot of stuff happening, amazing stuff happening in the 90s, but I just wasn't aware of it. But I was along for the ride as Agile methods expanded and grew. And we're at this interesting inflection point where we're starting to see organizations say, look, we're no longer focused on agile, just, you know, Cap One most recently laid off about 1,200 folks, killed the whole job family of agility. And in that announcement, they said, we expect agile to be the normal way of working. Mm-hmm. And we're going to integrate that into our product. And so very difficult for the people that were focused on agile. But I see that as a symptom of a community that I think is kind of lost the plot a little bit. And maybe that's where we can take it from there. But I really see we've lost the focus on getting stuff done. We've lost the focus on it, and I say we very generally. There are amazing pockets of really great delivery.
Sure.
But a lot of the Agile community focused on the making it safe for people to deliver and the sort of human experience and team building. And all of those things are absolutely necessary, but not sufficient. If you've got a great Scrum team that's developing software solutions, services that are not needed by the marketplace, that are coming late because of the organization's planning mechanism. I think we've become a little too insular and we don't see ourselves going back to that original analogy. The Agile team is a component that even if it works well, it, when plugged into a system that is not focused on value flow, if the team doesn't know why they're building what they are building, then they can't be successful. So I think we, and I've seen the community sort of move increasingly and focus on the things that we can control, mm-hmm. Which is, what are the team dynamics? Is the team happy? Are we delivering something? Is our velocity up? And meanwhile, the things that are harder to fix, how's our organization fund value? How do we measure value? Who the heck knows who the customer is? And you look back at XP, and one of the core tenants was on-site customer. It was not product owner. It was, you literally are sitting hip to hip with the customer. You're developing small checks or small chunks of work, running it by them, validating that it's what they want, finding out quickly when you're wrong, which is human nature, right? And taking corrective action. And I really think for lots of reasons, the Agile community is in an inflection point where Agile is necessary, but not sufficient. Mm-hmm. And I really see a lot of the technical innovation that at that time was happening in XP and other Agile methods. The wiki was developed by Ward Cunningham, who was involved with that first XP team. I see most of that technical innovation is now in, and rightfully so, in the DevOps community. And you can't do DevOps without Agile, but honestly, if you're just doing Agile without end-to-end value stream, like the cultural things and the business things that are in DevSecOps or DevBizSecOps or any combination of syllables that you want to string together, Agile's necessary but not sufficient. So that's kind of a very, very long story of how I got here. And the podcast for me was a great way to early on talk to the experts, talk to, I already knew Ron, but, you know, talk to Bob Martin or talk to any of those early pioneers. I met Elizabeth Hendrickson through the podcast. I met Esther Derby and Dinah Larson. And, you know, the list goes on of people that I was probably a little too shy to just go up and have a conversation with. But if I had the mic, you know, and the headphones, you know, that was my ticket into sitting down and having a conversation. So
I don't know that I've ever known you to be shy, Bob. I don't know that I buy that part, but the rest of your argument,
you didn't know me then.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Yeah. I mean, I think it was a paraphrase here, but I believe there was a quote from David Hussman that was around along the lines of, if you don't know where you're going, it's easy to iterate to failure. Right.
Right.
And so, and that's certainly something I've always said when talking with people and not uniquely, others say too, you know, when talking to someone about Scrum or any agile method, you know, you've still got to have strategy involved. You've still got to have customer involvement. You still, you know, if you really want to get to the holy grail of 10x improvement and team efficiency or whatever, then you've still got to have all of these other practices and contract models and budgeting, you know, and executive support, and everything kind of has to come together to hit that extreme efficiency improvement. It's not just having a product owner and a Scrum Master, right? And defining those titles, to be sure.
Right.
So let's go ahead, David.
Yeah, but there is a curiosity I have. I mean, you mentioned that when you were first exposed to what will become agile moving, the agile methodology, or the agile thinking, mm-hmm. you decided on the spot, this is for me. So
yeah.
Something struck a chord within you. What was it? I mean, what was that thing? Later you found a justification or a fundamentation of why it's so good. But there was something when you saw it that you said, this is it. What was it?
I wish I had a good answer for that. I mean, I actually have, and of course, it's hard to attribute this because I don't know if you've ever read the book by Malcolm Gladwell, Outliers. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Like I kind of happened to be at the right place at the right time with nothing to lose or not much. My wife was a pilot at that point. And we had a really cheap apartment here in DC, which you can't find anymore. And I knew that I needed to change direction. So it was as good a thread to pull on as any others. I think if I had to answer the question, which I'll do, it was the concentration on engineering practices that first drew me in. And I very rapidly understood the power of iteration.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, in my case was the thing that you said earlier is like the thing that said, this is it, is the humane and safe approach for the developer.
Uh-huh. Yep.
That was the thing that just rung so strong inside me. And then I found the risk management approach, which is mm-hmm. very scientific a way to do it. And then everything just found its place in a very good explanation why this is a good idea. But I remember that moment. It is like, this is it. Like, this is it. This makes sense. It is finally something that puts the merit of the software engineering in the right place. something that doesn't treat us as a French fries in McDonald's. I mean, it's it felt good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's all three of us came from an engineering software development
right.
background. Mm-hmm. We all came into Agile through extreme programming, and so kind of from that, as I think most people did approach Agile at that time of, I'm an engineer who feels undervalued, and my talents are being misapplied, and I'm tired of working on garbage that nobody cares about. This is a way to help me have a more, you know, fulfilling and efficient, rewarding, exciting software development career, you know? And I think that's how a lot of early Agile adoptions happened, was either the engineering team from kind of a grassroots level saying, hey, this is a better way to work, and if you want us to stay here, let's try it. Mm-hmm. Or with a little less good motivations, maybe the executive team saying, hey, I heard you guys are going to be a lot more efficient if you work this way, so try it, because I want more stuff from you.
Yeah.
I want you to get more shit done. Right.
Right.
But
cool. You can say shit on the podcast. I'm super excited. For
absolutely.
That.
Okay, absolutely.
Yeah. We got to get shit done. So we heard this can fix the engineering department.
Right. So how did we go from our idealistic views that all of us had 20 plus years ago of getting more meaningful shit done, let's say, to now, where, you know, Capital One is letting go of Scrum Masters and saying that role is not important anymore. Is that a good or a bad thing? Is that an indication of a failure of Agile when economic hard times hit? Or is it an indication of maturity and a rethinking? I mean, there was no Scrum Master role in extreme programming specifically, right?
Sure.
So, you know, how did we go from there to here? And is Agile failing? And if so, why does, you know, why or when, where does Agile fail?
Well, probably not surprisingly, I have an opinion. and I actually kind of need to go back to the birth of Agile to sort of illustrate it. Although I certainly see this behavior in DevOps space. So maybe that's why DevOps is really, I think, the new flag bearer. Although it loses the plot because there are many people in that DevOps space that assume the tooling is the most important part. And while the tooling is exceedingly important, it is the people stupid, right? It's the people stupid. That individuals and interactions over processes and tools. That simple phrase, individuals and interactions over processes and tools. Well, what do we hear from most agilists? Scrum is the best. You must use Scrum. And it's these three roles, five events. I don't call them ceremonies. Get married, do something exciting with your life. That can be a ceremony. That sprint planning meeting, just a meeting. And three artifacts. And use that as a starting place and add things to it. But that's sacrosanct. That those ideas are sacrosanct. And I don't want to pick on Scrum, because the same behavior happens in less and in safe and in, unfortunately, there's such little penetration with XP that I don't know that it happens as much now. But you would find XP teams that would say we must pair program because, you know, the white book says that they paired program. But if we look back at the birthplace of Agile, and here I'm talking about the manifesto, built into the first thing is this idea that whatever process we're using has to be situationally appropriate for the problem we're solving and the people that are solving it. And everybody was experimenting and making up stuff, right? Ken and Jeff were making up stuff. Kent and company on the XP team were making up stuff. Alistair was maybe a little more ivory tower, but he was making up things and trying experiments and seeing what worked. And we learned that lesson starting in the 40s and 50s with lean. Like, I often joke that if Taichi Ono came back from the dead, we got two problems. Zombie apocalypse problem is real. And he would look at the current Toyota production system and say, wow, this is completely different. There's still some core ideas about flow and just in time, you know, reducing variability and reducing the water line that he would recognize, but the processes and tools would be completely different. And I think because we, and I'll include myself in that, and the creators of these methods wanted to sell them to make a nice living for ourselves and to help teams out in the meantime, became very attached to processes, to the individual processes. And we forgot the experimentation part. You know, it's empirical process control is built into Scrum. And yet very few Scrum teams change their process. They'll tweak it a little bit, but they don't fundamentally wander off the ranch. And I think that was the moment agility stopped being agile. And the reason the manifesto came to be is all of these people were doing things differently, solving the problem in the best way that they could. And it's a sampling error that it happened to be all, you know, software development folks. But Alistair said, hey, let's get together and let's learn about each other's methods. Because they'd been kind of discussing it on that first wiki in the Portland Patterns repository. And they were all just making stuff up. And as soon as we stopped experimenting and investing any energy in sort of dogmatic adherence to a particular way of doing things, we lost the ability to innovate. And I say we, absolutely there are people out there innovating all the time and doing situationally appropriate processes and changing their processes, and, you know, but that I think is where things wandered off the agile ranch and onto, you know, a cult compound of a particular process.
Well, I remember that the moment I decided to focus my life more toward building products for the sake of the products than, I mean, for the sake of the customer value. Mm-hmm. And in contrast with what I have been doing the previous years, which was getting familiar and more and closer to the agility community. Mm-hmm. So there was a moment when I remember I said, I don't want to get closer to the agility community, not because it is wrong, not because agility is wrong. It's because exactly what you said is, it was clear to me, mm-hmm, that some elite first approach was happening there. And now, mm-hmm, you have to be in the right circles to get the juicy contracts. And when I saw all of that, I said, look, I mean, I love Scrum. I love it. I can keep studying myself.
A good place to start.
Right. Yeah. But at some point it's like, this looks like a club. and I like that. That's my personality. I prefer to do things for the value of things. But yeah, that moment where I saw that is like, sometimes it felt like they were doing, or some people, not everybody, I mean, of course, but some people were doing Scrum for the sake of the club. it felt that way. So I just
yeah, and I have contributed to that throughout my career. I've done quite well helping people implement Scrum. And my big regret is, and I do this in all of my current Scrum classes, is I don't think I caveated it enough in the past to say, look, do this for a while and then we're going to mix it up. I mean, Aaron, when we were out at Nationwide, we were layering in all sorts of stuff. We were doing visual management from Lean. Mm-hmm. We had Tom Pater and folks there were really focused on Lean and experimentation. And so we were lucky enough to be in a place where we could just say, let's try something. Right. But in many organizations, Scrum has become the new bureaucracy.
Yeah.
You're not doing estimation right. You're not doing user stories right. Right. Okay.
So where do you draw the line on what is innovation and how to encourage it then within a Scrum team? I mean, in kind of Agile more broadly, you always say, you can kind of innovate sort of however you want as long as you're using the manifesto as kind of your guardrails, right? If you're innovating, but you're still valuing individuals and interactions over tools and processes, then great, mm-hmm. that's still Agile, that innovation you did. But if your innovation is now, it's all about this tool, well, now you're drifting away. So that was a bad innovation, right? Mm-hmm. But it's harder, there's not an objective measurement a Kanban team with their cycle time of saying, well, that was a good change we made because cycle time went down. This is a more subjective thing here, right? So how do you encourage sort of the right kind of innovation as opposed to instilling a bureaucracy under the guise of innovation enforcing Scrum doctrine,
right? There's not a right answer for that. There are a whole bunch of wrong answers. I'll kind of go back to this idea of, I think losing focus on the mission outcome or business outcome, value for the customer, if you have a product. I mean, we use the term product a lot, and I really appreciate and understand your focus on product because you've been doing products, but I live pretty close to a fire department. What's their product?
Right.
Right. So they provide a life critical service, a mission. So sometimes we have to think about value in slightly different ways. And losing focus on value as the prime reason the team exists. Honestly, most organizations, government and private sector, are not designed to keep people busy for the sake of keeping people busy. Mm-hmm. A team is an expensive endeavor. I mean, you have development teams, how expensive it is to pay salaries, to keep benefits, to do recruiting, to do marketing, to ensure that that team is producing more value in whatever marketplace it happens to be in than it costs.
Sure.
Right? Without that connection, there is no reason for the team. So when we talk about keeping engineers safe, we Scrum Masters, people tend to focus in on the team, but a team that is producing less value than it's costing the organization to have there is not a safe team. And I don't mean safe in the scaled Agile framework safe
right.
team. I mean, we have to have a little empathy for the organization, understanding of the entire value stream. And I think if I had to put one metric in place of are we innovating and experimenting, is are we getting better at producing value, flowing value through the organization as measured in real value, not earned value or what we thought it would do in the marketplace? Are we Do we have appropriate quality in place? And by appropriate, I mean, if we're running a quick experiment or prototype, it can be really low quality. We want to trade speed off. It's, if it's life critical, a little more quality. And is sustainability remaining the same or increasing? And that's where the team health comes in. By sustainability, I don't necessarily mean, although I would love to solve the climate crisis as well, I don't mean environmental sustainability. Can these people show up tomorrow and the week after that and the month after that and the quarter after that, the year after that, and continue to deliver at the same level or higher? And any lean organization should have those three factors included. I mean, Agile is not lean manufacturing, so comparing it to Toyota is not, it's not a perfect analog by any stroke of the imagination. But we see that Toyota focused on people as the root of value delivery in the organization. Quality for their particular product, quality had to go up. And in fact, they went faster by improving quality, and it eventually evolved into total quality management, which you can do in manufacturing because you're producing the same thing over and over again. And sustainability was a real factor. When the automotive industry hits downturns, Toyota, and this may have changed recently, I don't know, but I kind of doubt it, is famous for retaining its people and upskilling them. Why? Because when demand spikes up, their biggest asset is a reserve of people who know how to build the cars. It's not steel. It's not cash, which they have a lot of. And it is ironic that they're not as far ahead. I've not worked at Toyota, but, you know, in their IT use of agility as they are in the lean manufacturing space. And I pick on them because they started it. But they're, you know, the same lean concepts apply everywhere. And so if we learn nothing from lean, it is lean never, like Neil Young and Crazy Horse, Rust never sleeps, lean never sleeps. It never gets comfortable. Never lets perfect get in the way of better, and never lets good enough get in the way of better, at least theoretically, right? That's the aspirational goal for a lean organization. I forgot the question that you asked, so
there is something I want to add to that comment. I came to a huge realization some years ago. Is that distinct and salient quality that you are mentioned about that developer that cares about value. Or when you said that the original intention was to be hip, I mean, hip, what was the phrase, hip to hip, with the customer. My great realization is that desire, that understanding that that's the way that this works, that connection to the flow of value, the importance of that, it happens that not all the developers are interested in that.
And that's okay. I think that's okay. But without the understanding that the reason that you have a job is that we're creating value, and a system that promotes understanding why will allow those engineers who do want to contribute their best work and innovate not only in their specialization, but for the creation of value, creating the preconditions and the environment for thriving is critical. And you're not going to have maybe that A plus amazing team. And it may be that there's somebody that just is, it wants to focus on the, I mean, I don't hate to badmouth Oracle. Actually, that's probably not true. But, you know, back in the day, there were people that were more dedicated to Oracle than to any system they were building. And, you know, insert any technology, you know, other than Oracle in there and you find the same behavior. And we need those people. But we also need to connect the work with the value that's created. So you are going to be really tough to deliver really amazing work if you don't at least have one or two people that understand and engage with the value that they're creating. And ironically, you know, go all the way back to sort of Bob the Builder, you know, those machines were super excited about the job they were just about to do. The interesting thing about that is, let's consider them knowledge workers because they're animated cartoon with personalities and understanding of the world rather than just machines. Knowledge workers tend to be, all the studies have shown, and maybe this will turn out to be some pop psych, you know, BS that, you know, we learn later doesn't actually exist, like the triune brain and other models of human cognition that have gone by the wayside. But the research currently says that knowledge workers, and developers are absolutely square in that world, are more highly engaged by the value that they create, by understanding why they're doing what they're doing. It's not a theoretical, let's solve this puzzle. Let's solve this puzzle in as a means to get something real done in the world. And I think that will always need those folks on our team. Are we going to need somebody who absolutely knows Kubernetes inside and out, or insert new technology there? Absolutely. And are some of them going to be, you know, laser focused on the technology? Sure. But we also need some other folks that are, say, I can do that, and I'm really interested in what we're doing with that technology.
Yeah. And so, I mean, Kubernetes is great. Scrum is great. All of these tools are great, right? But at some point, they'll be replaced by something. There will be some form of improvement upon them. And so we can't get hung up on that. We have to stay focused on, are we delivering value? So, Bob, I can't help but remember all of the wonderful long philosophical dinners that you and I had together when we worked together. And
beer and German food.
Over beer and, that's right, beer and German food in Des Moines, Iowa. I'm really realizing right now how much I miss those. Those were wonderful conversations that we had, and this has been a wonderful conversation too. But as we're starting to near the end of our time here, I want to make sure that we bring it back to, is it, if we started out with the question of, has Agile lost the plot? I think the answer is, we're all in agreement, is it has maybe lost the plot.
Maybe. Parts of it have, yeah.
Some, yes. Yep. A qualified yes, perhaps. So what, looking forward though, looking next from here, what gives you hope in kind of, let's say, the Agile movement, or ignoring even that term, what gives you hope in the next set of software developers, engineers, whoever, having that same sense of excitement that we all had 20 years ago when we discovered extreme programming? Is it DevOps, or, you know, you mentioned that, like what gives you hope?
Actually and again, I think the word product is potentially incomplete, but it's a little more exciting than value. It is the movement in organizations focusing on the marketplace and the product or service or value that they deliver. And then working, so hyper-focus on the customer, and working backwards through the whole value stream to understand who needs to work together. So we've got the most recently the book Project to Product, McKirsten. We've got Team Topologies. We've got the Unfixed Model from Jürgen Apollo. And all of those ideas are extensions of Agile. You can't do that without the team being able to iteratively, incrementally deliver, right? So if we had one qualifier for what is an Agile team, it is I can iterate and deliver an increment of value that can be validated in the marketplace rapidly at the appropriate quality. And if we can reduce those cycles without hindering quality or sustainability, we're better off. But those newer movements encompass the entire organization and an outreach to operations, business operations, and the people using the solutions that we're producing, whether it's software or any other thing. And it is that back to the future moment that is a throwback to lean. And that the very simple statement that value is produced in the hands of the customer or the people using it or absorbing that value. And that everything upstream is subordinate to that. And we need to experiment. We need to validate that we're having the right ideas about what people need. You know, we need to innovate our delivery model, but not focus on local optimization. I see lots of really great Agile teams that takes 18 months to get something into the marketplace. Why? Because the yearly planning and the project model that precedes that, and then big batch delivery. I don't care how good your Agile team, if it takes 18 months to iterate in the marketplace, you're screwed.
Yeah.
You can have a great Scrum team and they can't iterate value in the marketplace. So what gives me hope, and Agile is not dead, it's just getting repackaged, is the focus on value flow. And it's one of the reasons that Lightspeed is now so focused on this idea of a VMO, as a value management organization, as a way of looking at it. Has two primary reasons for being: to flow value, to measure that value in the marketplace, and to, it was originally started out as to change the system, but we've now called it adaptive governance, which means how do we change the structure of the organization, or the rules that we're playing by, or the methods we're using. And you know, it really is back to the future. It's nothing more than applying an 80-year-old technology of lean thinking to knowledge work. And you know, we saw it in Toyota. We saw it in that early Agile and all of the innovation that was going into creating new methods on the fly to solve specific problems. And we're seeing a resurgence of that idea. So Agile is dead. You know, long live Agile.
Exactly the words that were crossing my mind.
Yeah, I mean any trashing that we just did is not against Agile. It's against the implementation problems that we've seen in some places. I mean, but this thing is great. it just works. It just works.
Yep. Build and deploy value. Yep.
Yeah, exactly.
In neon That's letters. Right.
That's right. That's right. You got to keep that forward in your mind all the time, getting that value out there. David, any closing thoughts on your part?
No, I'm fine. I enjoyed this very much. Thank you for being here, Bob.
Yeah,
Yeah, thank you for tolerating such a long intro.
No, this was wonderful. It just means we have to have you back on again. But no, this was a wonderful conversation, Bob. Thank you so much for sharing, your story, your thoughts, on the current state of Agile now. I encourage everyone listening to really take to heart what you talked about, making sure that your teams at your organization are really focused on, as I think you said it, Bob, increasing the real value being delivered and flowing through that organization with the appropriate level of quality while maintaining teams' sustainability. And yep. that's a good way to move forward with Agile, regardless of any other hype or terminologies that you may be employing around it.
As Chuck D and Flavor Flav are famous for saying, don't believe the hype.
we cannot close on anything better than Chuck D and Flavor Flav quote. So thank you so much, Bob.
Yeah, thank you guys. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for joining us on the Scaling Tech Podcast, where we help you manage your growing engineering team. Brought to you by agilityfeet.com, experts in staffing engineering teams in Latin America for clients globally. For more information on today's episode and to submit your ideas for future guests, please visit scalingtechpod.com.